Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Feminem Podcast. This is the official podcast of Feminem, discussing all things femme, a little bit of EM, and everything in between. I'm Jenny Beck-Esme, editor-in-chief of Feminem.
And I'm Dara Cass, the other editor-in-chief of Feminem. Today, we're bringing you another fabulous talk from Fix 17. But first, a word from our sponsor. Jenny, do we have any sponsors?
We don't have any sponsors. We need a sponsor. We need a sponsor.
So we're not going to tell anyone to go buy Blue Apron?
No, although I do hear that they have a delicious hoppy cheese sauce.
So Blue Apron, if you're listening, we're open to sponsorship. But now back to the stuff we do have to tell. So we want to make sure that everyone knows to save the date for Fix 18. It's our second conference. It's going to be held in New York City again. We are so excited to be able to double the size of last year's conference with over 500 participants and tickets going to be available. All the details are on our website, www.feminem.org/fix18.
Did you tell them the dates? What are the dates?
Oh, I'm sorry. See, that's why I need you. October 16th through 18th. It's going to be a Tuesday through Thursday. Lots and lots of good times. You get lots and lots of good stuff in.
Perfect.
Am I forgetting anything, Jenny?
Well, yes, you did. You forgot. You forgot to tell them that we are currently holding an open call for speakers. Reviewing these Fix speaker submissions is so fun. We love hearing everyone's ideas for talks for the conference, and we want all of your thoughts. We want all of your ideas. We have a record number of submissions already so far, but we still want to hear from you. Well, not you, Dara.
Not me, Jenny?
No. We all hear from you.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
I think you and I are going to be on the stage plenty. But if you think you have something to say that the Feminem audience is going to want to hear, go to feminem.org, click on Fix 18 and submit. That deadline is coming up. It's January 5th. It's right around the corner. Get your submission in. Oh, and also, one last thing. Make sure to check out our Feminem shop. You want to get some of those Feminem goodies. We have both sets of the socks, the fabulous sporty socks, the delightful Argyle socks. Those say Fix 17. No, they don't say Fix 17. They say Fix, generic Fix. So get them now and wear them to Fix 18.
I will say, Jenny, I don't know if you follow me on Instagram. I mean, you should. But,
of course I do.
But we've posted regularly now when more than one Feminem comes to a clinical shift. And they're not all women. When we have multiple socks in the ER at the same time, we like to post our foot selfies, if you will.
I love it.
On social media. So our next talk is from Dr. Risa Lewis. I am hopeful that many of you know Risa. She is personally one of the most eclectic people I know. She's currently the director of point of care ultrasound at Thomas Jefferson University Hospital in Philadelphia, but you might know her because she is a staple on the SMAC circuit. And now I can say she's a staple on the Fix circuit. Risa is one of my most favorite speakers to watch. At the conference, it was cool. My husband was in the audience for the very beginning, and he saw Risa speak, and he comes out and he's like, she could make so much money as a speaker. She's incredible. So it's just the way that she tells a story that's captivating and engaging and just so on target.
I couldn't agree more. She's fantastic.
And in this talk, she tells us about books that have changed her life. And I want to remind everybody that, like all of our talks, everything that we put out on the podcast is available on the website under a blog post. And for Risa, all the books she mentions in her talk will be available in our Feminem bookstore. So without further ado, Jenny, I'd like to give you Risa's talk, We Are the Books That We Have Ever Read.
I'm going to be speaking with you about three books in one genre of books. Books have become very important for me. They help to answer questions. They fill in information. They help me with different skills in which I lack. But before we get into this is a confusing slide, I'm going to start with a story. I was in the third grade, Mrs. D'Amico's class. I was, as you'd expect, short, active, engaged, fresh, as my mother called it, underappreciated intelligence, as I called it. I brought home my report card, very good grades. However, the teacher wrote a comment. It said, talks too much in class. Now, my mother is old school as in the teacher is always right. not helicopter parent as in the kid is always right. The teacher was always right. Somehow my classroom behavior had elicited this comment. And according to my mom, children should be quiet and well-behaved, especially little girls. So when she angrily asked me what I had done to get this comment, I was scared and I just blurted out the first thing that came to mind. Well, it's because I just don't have anything to read. Now, no, my parents did not deprive me of books. And of course, I was in school, so there were books. However, I didn't have extracurricular reading. I didn't have something that I could sit and focus my time on when we had free period. My friends were reading the Little House on the Prairie series, so I thought that was good for me. I started with Little House in the Big Woods, and I completed all 9 in the series. And that's when I first learned that I could focus my energy, focus my brain power, and become a better person through books. 2 caveats. You don't have to take notes. I will be posting these resources online. I have a lot of friends that say, you know, Risa, that's great that you read so much and you want to tell me about your books. I have no time to read. In fact, I don't remember the last time I read a book. Fair enough. I will actually talk about podcasts and audiobooks that complement the books that I describe. If you're not a podcaster, podcasts are fantastic. I really encourage you to get going with them. They're free, and they're a good way to keep up on content. First book. Early on in my academic career, I started noticing a pattern. Some people were the chosen. They kept getting tapped. Tapped for a promotion, tapped for a salary increase, tapped for a title, tapped to speak locally, nationally, internationally. I wondered, how do you become that? How do you become that person? How do you get more protected time? How do you get more salary? Somehow there seemed to be a rule book or a game book or a secret code. There were clearly people that knew how to navigate this world, and I was not given those navigation skills. Until I read this book, Women Don't Ask, Negotiation and the Gender Divide. Now, I mentioned that my mother was old school. And actually, my parents started out quite traditional. They had a traditional approach to, for example, household chores. Men do this, women do that. Boys do this, girls do that. I have one brother and one sister. My brother's older, and although I fall in the middle, I always thought that I functioned as the eldest. Every night at dinner, 6 p.m., we sat down as a family. Dinner would finish, and my father would say, "Okay, girls, help your mother clear the table." This dialogue would ensue. So this is Dad, this is Risa. "Okay, girls, help your mother clear the table." "Dad, why do we have to help clear the dishes? How about everybody clears their own dishes?" "Risa, please help your mother clear the dishes." "Dad, I don't want to clear the dishes. What does Peter do?" "Peter takes out the garbage." "I want to take out the garbage. I actually prefer to take out the garbage. Peter can clear the dishes and I'll take out the garbage." See? Risa. Fresh. Actually, though, in this case, it was not underappreciated intelligence. I was actually onto something. And this book supported this notion that I had. Girls are assigned chores that promote dependence, that are routine and not worthy of attention. Boys are assigned chores that promote independence and might be singular, isolated, and noteworthy, maybe even receiving reward. So if the neighbors need snow shoveled or the lawn mowed, they would hire a neighborhood child, probably a boy. These gendered approaches for household chores give messages. Boys labor for money, for reward. Girls labor for love. And maybe this is one of the reasons why we as women have a hard time assigning value to the work that we do. The authors talk about this research, and in particular, at the beginning of the book, they discuss what brought this to their attention. One of the authors said that women grad students came to her. They were complaining. They kept being assigned as teachers' assistants, but the male graduate students were being assigned as teachers. The author was surprised. She went to her colleague making the assignments and asked what was going on. The colleague said, "Oh, it's simple. The men ask. The women didn't." the men ask. Think about the downstream effects of this. CVs are more robust, better jobs, better salary. We as women aren't taught to ask. We're not encouraged to ask. In fact, we think that somehow our work and our accomplishments will get noticed, somehow we'll get promoted. Well, sometimes yes, and sometimes no. I was working with a professional mentor. I showed him my CV, and I asked him, what do you think I can work on? He said, Risa, I noticed that you're not a reviewer for any journals. And it was true. He said, why? And I said, well, I don't know, I've published, but I thought somehow I need to get asked. He said, no, you ask. Write to the journal editors and ask if you can be a reviewer. And it turns out a lot of things in our world work this way. I did that. I wrote, and next thing I knew, I was a journal reviewer. So I want to have a call to action. I want to ask all of us to ask. Work on asking. Ask for increased protected time. Ask for a salary increase. Ask for a title. Ask to serve on a committee. Ask, practice asking, and let us know how you do. Slate Magazine has this great podcast series, 11 episodes, each about 10 minutes. They talk about negotiation, not just in your professional life, but also in your personal life. So book one, Women Don't Ask, Negotiation and the Gender Divide. Continuing on in navigating this academic emergency medicine career, I noticed another pattern. Some people seem to know how to write, not just write, but also get published. I wondered how that happened. I asked a few of them, and then asked them to come speak to the ultrasound community at one of our academy meetings. It turns out it's not rocket science. You have to be organized, you have to be disciplined, and you have to make it a habit. Here are some of the pearls they offered. Number one, cover letter and title page. Every journal requires it, so have a skeleton version saved that you can just adapt every single time you submit a manuscript. Next, Tuesday is writing. This is the name of an article that I read in 2008, Academic Emergency Medicine. The author was Stephen Lowenstein. I didn't know him, but I came to know him. He was my colleague when I worked at the University of Colorado. He was onto something, this concept of deep, focused work. Make it a habit. For him, it was Tuesday mornings. Sit, and that's your time to work. Forget distractions, no email, no social media. The brain needs to focus. Next, read and review. The more you read, the more you get exposed to good sentence structure, grammar, words. The more you review, the more you realize what reads well and what doesn't read well. What's publishable, what's not publishable. Also, you start seeing things that you could replicate for your own study idea. Writing is learned through imitation. Finally, there's no getting around it. You need to write well. So around this time, I was looking for something to get me to the next level. Almost like a marathon runner that was looking to shave minutes off her mile, this was the book for me, On Writing Well by William Zinsser. First published in 1976 with many, many subsequent editions. He was a professor of writing at Yale, and he was all about this concept of word economy. Think about like your bedroom closet chock full of clothes. First thing he recommends is declutter, simplify, shorten your sentences, simplify your concepts, one concept per sentence, use simple words, don't try to be elaborate and sound flowery. Next, strip everything down. Strip it down and slowly build up your writing. Next, be genuine, be yourself. Readers want something authentic and they can sense when you're not being yourself when you write. Finally, love words. Become really good friends with your dictionary. If you don't want to read the book, it comes as an audio. And I'd recommend two specific chapters. One is on scientific writing, and one is right at the beginning on method and form. On writing well, make it a habit. So when I finished residency, I had debt. I had student loans. Could I have a show of hands of those of you that might be in the same circumstance of having loans? Exactly. Now, you remember I came from a traditional household. No one taught me about finances, managing my money. I did always live below my means, but you remember, women aren't supposed to be the breadwinners. So there I was, trying to figure out how to navigate this. There are many books out there. This one very much spoke to me, Smart Women Finish Rich by David Bach. The hook is that Bach's role model was his grandmother. His grandmother, who worked at a major department store during Depression-era Brooklyn. She was the head wig buyer. And every week, she went to the bank, deposited her paycheck, and did something that we're all supposed to do. She deposited her paycheck and then put a little bit in the stock market. She did something called paying yourself first. She actually died a very wealthy woman. Now, what does paying yourself first mean? For us, it kind of boils down to contributing to a retirement account, such as a 403b or a 401k. Now, the earlier and the younger you start, the more this money will build. And it's actually remarkable if you look at the graphs. So I'm going to ask all of you to participate with me in an exercise and know that this is a place of trust. I'm going to ask everybody to please close your eyes. Keep them closed. Raise your hand if you currently contribute to a retirement account. You can put your hands down and open your eyes. Congratulations, about 80% of the room currently contributes to a retirement account. Now, some of us work at places where they require you to, but I really wish someone had told me that I should start contributing sooner than I learned about it. Bach also talks about something called the latte factor. The latte factor is a phenomenon in economics where small expenditures add up over time. So many of you know I like coffee, specifically espresso, and we're going to do this exercise. So I actually drink a quad shot every day. That's two double shots, but then that's it. Depending on the city, depending on the coffee shop, that costs anywhere from $3 to $5. If we look at this annually, that's about $1,800. Sobering. Now, Bach is not arguing that I should give up my habit or that we should give up life's simple pleasures. But what he wants us to do is get in touch with what our latte factor is, pay attention to it, and decide if you want to modify behavior. Bach also talks about credit card and credit card debt. Pay off your credit card debt and then cut up your credit cards. Maybe not all of them. He recommends paying with cash so you're aware of the money flowing. Finally, if you're ever going to pay for something that's more than about $100, just think about it. So I loved this book because it taught me mindfulness regarding finances. It seemed that I could get on top of it, and the habits that he put forth I found sustainable over time. If you want a good listen, the Freakonomics podcast is excellent. Stephen Dubner, who's the host, co-authored the book called Freakonomics. And he self-reveals that he actually thought he was going to be a therapist or a banker. So he actually marries the two, and a lot of his episodes are on the psychology of money and spending and investment and income disparity in our country and other very interesting and relevant topics. He even tries to tackle healthcare. Smart Women Finish Rich. Champion your finances. So now we're on the final genre, the biography. And maybe more than anybody else you know, I really love reading biographies. I like learning about individuals who stand out, who have made a difference. I'm interested in their journey, how they dealt with suffering and obstacles. Did they have resilience? How did they build that? Rosalind Franklin was a British chemist and X-ray crystallographer. She's credited with developing the basic structure that became the double helix for DNA, that for which Watson and Crick received the Nobel Prize. Now, she was 37, and she died of ovarian cancer. People feel she was robbed of the credit due, but you can't receive the Nobel Prize posthumously. She navigated a very male-dominated world. She excelled in topics that were considered male, such as science, mathematics, language, and sports. She was a huge outdoors person, and she hiked many of the mountain ranges of Europe. ER, Eleanor Roosevelt. So this is a three-volume biography by Blanche Wisen Cook, who's actually a professor at John Jay School of Criminal Justice here on the West Side in Manhattan. By the age of 12, Eleanor Roosevelt was an orphan. Both parents had died. And although she was born into a very moneyed and prominent family, she was made to feel an outsider because of her physical appearance. I believe that these two factors contributed to her empathy. She was an avid activist and fought for the rights of women. Women in the workplace, minors, African Americans, Asian Americans, World War II refugees. She was independent at a time that first ladies generally were not independent. She wrote a nationally syndicated weekly column. She also was a huge outdoor person, hiking regularly. The notorious RBG, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, whip smart, a Shakespeare scholar, an opera aficionado, second woman ever to be appointed to the US Supreme Court, exquisitely inspiring, and very well known for her collars and her decolletage. So one of my inspirations is this weekly podcast, the New York Times Book Review podcast. They talk about newly released books, they interview authors, they talk about the bestseller list, they update you on what's going on in the book industry, and at the end of each podcast, the reviewers sit around and do a what I'm reading this week. And this single-handedly is one of the sources for where I get my biography thoughts. Three books and one genre of books. As a woman navigating academic emergency medicine, they've helped me answer questions. They've helped me take better care of myself in my professional life. They've helped me take better care of myself in my personal life. Surround yourself by inspiring books. Surround yourself by inspiring people, such as what all of you have done by coming to Fix 17. We are the books that we have ever read. Thank you very much.